Hello and welcome to another edition of the Pro Basketball Talk podcast here at NBC Sports. We are lucky to have with us today, we're kind of fortunate right now if you're an NBA fan because there's a lot of good beat writers around the league, but one of the best and covering one of the most interesting stories out there right now is Candace Buckner of the Indy Star covering the Pacers. Candace, thank you very much for joining us here at the PBT podcast today.
I appreciate it. Thanks for that compliment too as a start.
You're one of those people I think everybody thinks is a must read. And with that, you know, everybody wants to know your thoughts on the Pacers because you're close to what's been one of the more interesting stories in the league this year with Paul George and everything else. So we'll start there. I think the first question, I just did a radio tour talking to some NBC affiliates, and I got asked this question about three times. What happened Tuesday night? Yeah.
It's still not enough offensively to take down the Warriors. So nothing to be ashamed about offensively, but their problems right now are on the other end.
And that was actually one of the things I wanted to talk with you about because I watched them. If you look bad against the Warriors, I kind of write that off because the Warriors make a lot of teams look really bad, some good defensive teams. But, you know, a couple games before, you've got the Blazers just killing them from three and beating them from the perimeter, and then the game after that, the Jazz beat them up inside. It doesn't seem to be just one thing right now. That would be Andrew Bogut, not the fastest guy in the league. So,
right.
It is not like DeAndre Jordan just beat you to the hoop here. Is it something where there was after the Warriors, Pacers had a few games off, had a few days off, I should say, could get in some practices before they face Miami on Friday night on ESPN, I believe. It's another national game. You're going to be on SportsCenter again, by the way? You are all over on the...
outlets last year, zero, absolutely nothing, and now all of a sudden, When only you're writing about injuries, and it will be coming back, and goes out this week. So no sports center for me this Friday. However, I ain't complaining.
I don't blame you. It's a good spot to be in, you know, where it's, and plus, it's hard to cover a team if you know that's bad for that long. Yet it's just the season really grinds on. So this has got to be a lot more interesting.
Right, and they had some times where they were interesting in the sense that they'll make a game out of every game that they play in, but they'll always end up losing. So you have these 8-game stretches of losses, and then oh my gosh, they almost beat Cleveland, but.
No.
I'd rather talk about Paul George and what he's doing. If it wasn't for Steph Curry, I would imagine that anybody would say he would be the front runner for MVP right now, right?
Yeah, I think he'd be in the mix. I'll be honest with you. I think that there's a second tier, and it's so early. I mean, but I think there's a second tier where Russell Westbrook, Paul George, maybe Kawhi Leonard, some people are in. It's just that it's a whole nother tier from where Steph is. But let's talk a little about Paul George. I'll admit, I'm surprised with how well he's playing, and particularly, like, the explosiveness is back, the fearlessness is back.
Yeah, and you know what? In those last six games, and of course this was coming off of months of rehab and inactivity as far as game action, those first six games, you did not see the explosiveness and the athleticism that had made Paul George special. And he was timid, for lack of a better term. And then you see him having to get carried off in the regular season finale in Memphis. And then you're thinking, man, you know, how much is that going to set him back? So I really am surprised to see him this active, this athletic, this early in the season. I thought it would come back for sure, but I did not expect see it in the first month of the season. And of course, he wound up getting the Eastern Conference Player of the Month award. You know, I'm not going to pretend that I'm smart and say that I saw it coming all along. I did not see this at all. So it is a pleasant surprise, especially for the Pacers. They expected him to be back, but to be back to this level, there's no way they could have saw that coming. And his play has definitely coincided with them being so successful, as successful this early with their change to the spread lineup.
What does he credit this to?
Well, you know what, you basically had a whole year to just work on your skills, and that's, you know, players get better in the off season, more so than, you know, playing helps, but in the off season, all you do is just work on your skills and develop. And he basically had a whole year of that. Once he really got better, was playing up and put one-on-one, and that helped. So he perfected the shot, because that's basically all he could do. He couldn't do too much running up and down, and then progressed to play one-on-one to 3-on-3. And you have essentially 9 to 10 months of nothing but working on your skills. That has to improve your game. Of course, it could just be the natural progression. This is his sixth year, and we might have seen this last year from Paul George. Who knows? We'll never know. But he puts it to, you know, all the hard work he put in over the last year, and I can definitely see why. All he did was work on the skills.
Well, clearly, he obviously worked on that jump shot, because this is a guy who wasn't a bad shooter, but you didn't fear, like, you feared the drive more than the shot, and you'd go under a pick and you'd kind of let him have it. He's killing people with the jumper now.
You know, there were some times when he tried to match Steph Curry. During that Tuesday game, Steph would come down, shoot a three. He would come down and shoot a three. And that worked in the first quarter for the first 6 minutes. And I was surprised. Like, he is matching Steph Curry, or at least trying to match Steph Curry. But if you look at the numbers, he's right there. Steph is far and away above leading everyone in three-point shooting, but there's Paul George with 68, 69 threes. And again, I'm with you, Kurt. I never really pictured him as a shooter, more so as a scorer. But now you have to trust that he can make those shots.
Yeah, he can, and the defenses are having to plan for that now and kind of scheme for them in a way that they didn't yet. Is George comfortable now playing the smaller lineup more? I mean, they're not. We'll get into this, the transition, but has he grown comfortable with being more of a four?
Well, that's the thing. Since the sort of the regular season, he has not been at the four. He's been playing at three. T.J. Miles has played the four, taking on the responsibility of, you know, defending Draymond Green when he was on the court on Tuesday when Draymond was at the four, and while Paul George plays his natural position. So, although that was a big storyline in the preseason, and he made a big hubbub about, you know, I don't think I'm cut out for this, you know, four spot, Frank Vogel will switch things up, allow C.J. Miles to take that burden, which C.J. has accepted because he sees it as an opportunity for, you know, him to punish those four guys, those four role players on the other end. Essentially, CJ is a 6'6 shooting guard.
Yeah.
So they're having to defend him. And although sometimes he will get bullied under the block and he's not the best rebounder, he can take advantage of it on the other side. So the transition and adjustment has more so been on CJ Miles' left and not PJ.
Is Vogel, you've also, I mean, they've had some success in Indiana going with a couple of bigs on the lineup. I mean, they're trying a lot of different things, I think, depending on the matchups. Is Vogel getting used to when to use this, when to go a little bigger?
Yeah, you know, he's still a defensive, I think, in my opinion.
Yeah.
He's still a defensive-minded coach at heart. And there will be times when he wants to go back to smash mouth just because that's his automatic response. He's a coach that likes to grind out and defend, but this roster has been created to score more points. It's a roster full of wings and a couple bigs, so he has to play to the strength of the roster. There have been times where he has gone big, but you know, he'll only do that to match up with like the Chicago's or he didn't even have to do it against Washington this year, but he'll use it sparingly. But I think they still have a problem in that they're big, Jordan Hill, LaVoy Allen. You know, these aren't, you know, starting caliber,
no,
you know, fours and fives. And so you still have some holes with Jordan Hill on the court or LaVoy Allen on the court. Although they do hustle and they work hard, they're just not going to give you starting caliber production of a big in this league.
Yeah, I think both of those guys are great as bench players because I think one of the things you want off of a big off the bench is that hustle and that energy, and Jordan certainly brings that. LaVoy brings that, where they're going to work hard most nights, but you're right, they're just not the skill players that are going to start in this league.
And I would say when they needed rebounds in Portland and Salt Lake City, those guys didn't show up and keep guys off the board. So it was a road trip. I get it. It was the third and fourth game of the road trip, so legs could have been tired. But the way that again Portland and Salt Lake City and Trevor Booker and Derek Favors together, the way that they played and kept possessions alive with their offensive rebounding shows that the Pacers, even when they go big, they'll have a problem. They'll have a problem matching up against more physical, more energetic bigs in this league.
I think that's one of the advantages of being in the East for Indiana and some of these teams is that, look, there's good teams in the East. I don't want to, like, I don't, you know, obviously the West is down a little bit there and the East is up a little bit this year. But when you look at the front lines out West, you get those larger, more athletic, more troublesome front lines if you try to go small on them, where, look, the Clippers and Utah, you mentioned with Booker, they didn't even have Gobert for that game. Obviously San Antonio's got this, all these up and down the line out West, it's more challenging. But in the East, I think that that's one thing that they have to their advantage in Indiana is that they can stay small a lot. They're not going to run into the lineups that can punish them as much in the front line.
That's true so far. Detroit comes to mind, but Indiana,
yeah.
Andre Drummond has been punishing everybody. On the
board. Exactly.
But you're right. And when they did play Washington, and Washington has tried to go spread this year, I don't know whether out of necessity with injuries or just that's what Whitman wanted to do. They pretty much punished Washington with their looks when C.J. Miles and Paul George combined to hit 17 threes. So they can get away with the small ball deal, especially if Paul George, C.J. Miles, I'll go George Hill and Monte Ellis in there because eventually, C.J. Miles may be streaky, and somebody else will have to step up and kind of be that complimentary player to Paul George. They can get away with that if somebody's stepping up on a night-to-night basis in the Eastern Conference to help Paul George.
Is this a team that you expect to see try to make a move as the deadline approaches? I mean, obviously there's been some Solomon Hill rumors, but is this something where any moves are minor, or are they looking to do something?
I think they would need – it depends on Miles Turner's progress after he comes back from his hand injury. And it's just – he was their second rim protector on that second unit. So – it depends how far back he'll be once he returns, but I think they'll still need a big who can score a little bit more on his own, but also just someone that you can entrust to defend, to rebound, and get you some buckets every now and then. And I'm not sure if Solomon Hill can get you that type of player. They'll probably have to throw in somebody else. But I think, LaVoy Allen and Jordan Hill, as serviceable as they are, they'll still need somebody probably with a little bit more skill, with a bit more skill set. But that's depending on Miles Turner and his injury.
And Miles was one of the guys I was going to bring up and ask you about. I mean, how is he doing? What's the timeline on him? Would be excited to see him get back because he was one of the guys who I really was impressed with. I'd heard so much coming into into camp and I actually saw him at summer and like he does have a funny running gait. And all that said, he moves quickly. He gets across the lane quickly. He can block shots. He really did provide a good defensive presence, and you can see a guy who will eventually be a real threat from three in there.
Can go out even farther and hit a three. Miles can develop in his game.
Yeah, how high is the organization on him? I've got to think that they think they got a steal.
Oh, for sure. You know, they were even saying that back at Summer League in Orlando. They thought they, you know, had the steal of the draft at number 11. And he was really good then. And I was thinking, okay, he's playing against rookies, second-year guys, D-League guys. Impressive, but, you know, let's see him come November, December. And before the injury, he was very good. The only concern that I would think that the organization has is that he has some knick-knack things as far as injuries that have kept him out. Even in training camp, it was before he was drafted, you know, you heard about the running gait, you heard about the shift. Training camp, it was a knee. And now it was in a Boston game, and he just kind of, I didn't see the play in the way that they described it. His hand got caught with, like, I think it was Drevko. I'm not sure. It was a Celtic player. His hand got caught, and that fractured your hand.
Yeah.
So he has shown signs of not being the most tourable of guys, and he's so young. So very high, but you have to be cautious with him.
And you brought up, we talked actually a little at Summer League this year, but you brought up one of my pet peeves with that. It's like, guys that look great at Summer League, you just cannot read too much into that at all. The year before, the Summer League MVP was Glenn Rice Jr., and he's out of the league. Like, it's such a different level of play, and it's such a playground level of play on a certain level, because there's just the structure isn't there, that you can get some broad strokes, but you got to be careful reading much at all into anything that happens there.
Right, and I'll say this, Solomon Hill played, he was entering, he was becoming a third year player, he was the most experienced guy on that Pacers roster, and he did not look good at all. I thought he had to play because he was still young. But man, if there was an opportunity for him not to play, maybe he should have taken that, because he didn't look good in the structure. He didn't look good. He didn't shine above the rookies in the D-leaguer candidates. And now you kind of see that the Pacers did not pick up his fourth year option, and he's been mentioned in trade rumors. I don't think it's because of that. I just think it's more so he's a defensive guy. He's average on the offensive end, and this is a team that wants to score more points, and everyone on the roster should have some sort of offensive skill set. Right now, Solomon Hill doesn't have that, so he could be a bit expendable.
Just make a lot of sense. I got to ask you, how they're in that second tier with the Pacers. You know, I think the sense around the league is that it's Cleveland, and then is it Indiana? Is it Toronto? Is it Chicago? Is it Atlanta? Who's in that? Do they feel that they're in there? Do they feel that they've got a chance to, like, even get to the Eastern Conference Finals this year?
No.
No, I think I just Chicago's the one that becomes interesting to me, but talk about a team that looks better on paper than actually does in person and has a lot of things to figure out. They're certainly there. There's a lot open. And as of today, as of us speaking, you look at the standings and you know who's second in the East? Charlotte. When Kid Gilchrist went down, I think we all thought, "Oh, that's too bad," because that really hurt their chances. They've surprisingly played really good defense, and they've been on a little streak with Al Jefferson out hurt because their defense suddenly looks good again, shockingly.
And Nick Batum, I know he just had another triple double.
Yeah. Yeah, I did not know that about you. You covered him for a while. Did you say you were in Portland for a while?
I covered the Blazers for the Vancouver Columbian and Vancouver, Washington, Vancouver, BC. It's right on the border.
Vancouver is if people don't know, like Vancouver is one of the five most beautiful cities in the world. Like it's a beautiful place.
BC or Washington?
Vancouver. Oh, yeah, BC, yeah.
And you know what? I did not make the trip up I-5 to Vancouver. I should have when I was moving up there. I've heard great things about it. Very green, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, very green, very lush. Just it reminds me of a little bit of San Diego in the sense it's like the cleanest big city I've ever been in. So it's like...
Oh, wow.
So it's worth checking out. Yeah, there's your the PBT podcast travel tip for the day. Like Vancouver, British Columbia. Next time, Candace, you and I will just do an hour of like places to eat in cities around the NBA. So,
you know what? This is now my third season on the beat, so I can probably tell you about 15 good places now. I'm building up my repertoire.
You know,
but I'm still learning. I still haven't found a good place in Milwaukee.
Oh, really? Okay, well, you know who the guy to talk to, by the way, is Jeff Zilgit of USA Today. Now we're way off topic, but Jeff Zilgit of USA Today, he and Kevin Arnovitz from ESPN are the two best foodies kind of on the beat. And they know, they're the guys who can help you find anything anywhere. They're great. So that's... Jeff's great about, if you want to... It's the one thing you can get him to really talk about as much as basketball. He'll talk food all day long. He's a guy who really knows his stuff. So cool. The one other thing I really wanted to talk with you about, because you kind of have a different perspective. When we talked last, you were at the Lakers-Pacers game a week or so ago when the surprise Kobe retirement announcement night. That was a strange night just because before the game, it's you and me, and there were like two TV cameras in interviewing Byron Scott, and there's nobody there because it's kind of a slow Sunday night in LA. And by the time the post game rolled around, like suddenly, like every media member who could get there was there. So suddenly, like Lee Jenkins is in the building somehow. Like everybody's there. What were your impressions of that night? It seemed like a surreal experience in some ways.
I thought it made everything, you know, pale in comparison because I was. Hoping for, you know, that game.
two?
Down to a field goal or something like that.
Exactly.
It hasn't happened so far, and it didn't happen that game, but for those 4 minutes, it was fun to be a part of.
Yeah, there's a real hunger for him to see him do well, and I don't think that's just at Staples Center, where, like you said, he'll hit those shots, he'll get on a little run, and he ended up airballing the chance to, I don't forget if it was tie or take the lead, but there's an energy about him, but what's strange now, if you watch it, is it's not just there, like every Laker game. Like, you watch the game a little bit, you put it on, and he hits a shot, and there's these loud ovations. Like, people want to see one more little, you know, Kobe-like run. As much as they winced at it back when he was beating their teams with it, now they want to, you know, see it one more time before it goes away. It's kind of a strange experience to hear him cheered in, like, Portland.
Yeah. He was on the bench while the young guns finished up the game and came close to winning, but that's the future for the Lakers, right?
You gotta play those kids in the fourth, and especially Russell, and he looked a lot better in that game. And that's something, I mean, you probably saw a little of last year with all the injuries, was Frank Vogel trying to find a way to develop. Like, right. You guys gotta give these guys minutes and see what they really are now. Yeah.
I think put in a lot of work in the offseason, but it was Frank Vogel who, when he took over, he freed Paul George from the bench. And I believe that was in his second year. He started playing the guy, and they had success. He's had success ever since. Most improved player. He should definitely get comeback player of the year or most improved again this year. I don't know. Whatever
they're calling that. Whatever they're calling that this week. Yeah, he's done. You know, I say whatever they're calling that award this week. Yeah, it's. I think he's the most improved now. But yeah, he should be in the mix. But I'll tell you that there's a lot of. When I look at guys like George Hill, he's really found a way to use George Hill's strengths and make that work.
Yeah.
Or are you not the biggest George Hill fan?
What was that?
Or are you not the biggest George Hill fan?
When Paul George is on his streak, you know, it's difficult for somebody like George Hill to shine, but Vogel's found a way to have him, to put him on the second unit so he can be a little bit more featured along with Ronnie Stuckey. But no, he does a good job in his game, and that's, you know, spreading the floor and sometimes getting aggressive and penetrating.
Yeah, that doesn't seem to be as consistent, but... You know, you look back at that now, I'm like, you remember how much Popovich didn't want to give him up at the time, but I guess that trade kind of worked out for the Spurs.
Kind of worked out, yeah. And I saw someone on Twitter say the other day,
Yeah.
Who would say that at this point? I mean, who can say, you know?
You can't say
which one they would take at this point.
Yeah, and by the way, you can't say they would have developed the same way or anything also. You're not just changing one variable. They're not is Kawhi Leonard the same player if he's not brought up in the Popovich Spurs system? I mean, there's a lot of questions. I mean, not that he would be a bad player, but would he be Kawhi Leonard player is a valid question. So,
All right.
Well, Candace, thank you so much for your time. I know you've got to get to practice today and get back on the road with the Pacers pretty soon. Thank you so much for your time. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Kurt. I appreciate it. And
Oh, I can hit you up for food there. We'll talk next time you're out here.
All right, thank you, man.
And be sure to check out Coming Up PBT Podcast every Monday and Thursday, where we're going to have great guests and talk about everything going on around the league. Talk to you soon.